This is The Agenda from News Radio 560, KPQ, and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern are open for discussion.
Well, thanks for joining us on the program today. We have a busy, full studio here. The 2019 Innovator Awards Luncheon for Gwinnett coming up a week from Wednesday, the 25th, at the Wenatchee Convention Center. And we're going to focus on a couple of the finalists. Jenny Rojanostian, the executive director, is here along with two of our honored guests. And Jenny, I'm going to let you kind of do the introductions here. We're going to focus on just a taste of who are the two of the great finalists you'll get a chance to meet if you come on out to the awards luncheon. Thanks for joining us on the program today.
Well, thank you for having us on air at our 19th annual Innovator Awards Luncheon. We're going to give out five awards. We have two awards in business, three in education. And I brought a finalist from our business categories. One of our two business awards is Innovative Use of Technology in Business. And we have Kyle Hendrickson here with 4A Coffee. He's one of our three finalists. And then I've also brought Bob Bauer from the Schlang County PUD. He and Debbie Gallagher are nominated or finalists for STEM Champion of the Year, one of our three education awards. So we're just really excited to shine a spotlight on not only these two, but all 14 finalists next Wednesday.
It's going to be a busy day. Let's again remind you at the end how we're going to go over how you get tickets, but let's touch on that real quickly right now as well.
Yeah, go to our website, gwata.org, G-W-A-T-A.org, and you can buy tickets to come to our luncheon. It is $40 if you're a GWATA member. There's over 160 business members in North Central Washington, so check on our membership list to see if your company is a member. And for the public, $55. It includes a gourmet lunch. We have booths from our from not only our sponsors, but also our nominees. And I just want to thank our sponsors really quickly. Microsoft, Eclis Capital, People's Bank, and Stamilt Fruit. They are our four presenting sponsors. We could not be more grateful to have their support this year.
I wanted to get right to that because often we do these interviews and I let my guests sneak out of here and somehow we overlook the main sponsors for those. So I wanted to I flipped right to that page.
Thank
so
you for that shout out.
we were on the same page. Bob, Kyle, thanks for joining us on the program. Let's start with Kyle Hendrickson, a finalist for the Innovative Use of Technology in Business. And if there ever was an example of that, 4A Coffee. We've been watching we saw the structure pop up down on Wenatchee Avenue, and that was pretty interesting. And everyone went, "Oh, another coffee stand." But that's where things depart from normal. Tell us a little bit about what is different about 4A Coffee. Very, very different than the usual coffee stand where you just pull up and order your coffee. Tell us about this great idea. It's just fascinating.
Well, I'm glad you like the idea. It's both simple and complicated. So the simple part is for the customer, it's just you plug in your order in an app and you don't have to worry about when you pick it up. You don't have to worry about when we're going to make it. And then you just come when you're ready, and we try to have it ready for you. So far, so good on that one. And then from our side, it's a little more complicated with a bunch of technology and apps and things like that. So
the trick is, number one, I'd imagine there's no line. You're not waiting in a big line.
We hope not.
Line.
We're not supposed to have a line. So, yeah, that's part of the value for the customer.
And the app, obviously, you know I'm coming. Is there some GPS or
We have to use GPS. So I know when we say that, people worry about privacy a little bit. But we only use the GPS from the time that the customer places the order. And then it helps us know when to place the order into production.
So if I was over in East Wenatchee and I was heading out to Kashmir, I may live in Kashmir as an example, and I'm heading home and I want a little pick-me-up or my favorite cold coffee drink or something on a hot day. So that figures all of that out so it's ready for me when I pull in?
Yeah, it's supposed to be. If you're heading home in the morning, that'd be best because we're only open right now till 11 or 12 on the weekend. But we'll be open later and later as we get better at this and as we grow a little bit. But, yeah, that's how it would work. You'd be usually it'd be someone sitting at home ready to go to work in the morning since most people are drinking coffee in the morning. And so you could place it in your car before you start driving. We don't recommend people do it when they're driving. But then, or you could do it at home, right when you get up, or any time really before you get in your car. And then you just drive, and you can stop somewhere else on the way. Your order goes into an on-deck status, and so it's just waiting, and then it's using that GPS, and it's pinging every once in a while to say where you are. And then when you get close enough at the right time, it tells our employees to start making your order.
What prompted you to come up with this, Kyle? Was it as simple as waiting in line at a coffee stand along with all the other customers? Or?
Well, we have Cafe Mela in downtown Wenatchee, and we try to do really good quality. And the thing, it started there where people would try to sell us software for doing remote orders, and I was never really willing to do that because you could stop on the way. You could place an order remotely, and then we'd be making your coffee, and you'd be trying to time your arrival to it, and then you might stop and say hi to a friend, which happens a lot, or someone, or you might just have to drive three times around the block for parking because downtown is like that sometimes. And no matter what, if it's not a good experience, it's not a good experience in our business, and that's not what we're trying to do. So started thinking, well, how do we avoid that bad experience even if it's not our fault? And then that's how we got to the using GPS, and then it sort of snowballed from there into a drive-through, and here we are a long time later.
And you beta tested this for a long time, it seemed.
Yeah, and beta testing for us just means, you know, as the software is getting developed, we had people there coming through as real customers, trying to understand, get feedback from them, and while different features are being developed. So it took a lot longer than we thought it would, but, you know, we didn't want to release it until we could give at least the basic experience pretty consistently every time.
I got to ask, how's it working? How's it going so far?
It's actually going really well. We have a lot of happy customers. We don't have as many customers yet as we hope to, but so far it's working great. I mean, most orders are going out right when people pull up, and people think that's a pretty novel experience to pull by. You can't judge how well it's going by how big the line is. So that's a little different than other coffee drive-thrus.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems to be going fairly well. We've never done this before, so we don't really know how it's going.
Yeah, do you find the App Store and Google Play?
Just on the App Store and Google Play, it's Foray Coffee, F-O-R-A-Y Coffee. And then we give, we know it's painful to sign up for new stuff and put your credit card in and do all the stuff. So we made it so that we give everybody $10 when they sign up. So as soon as they put $2.50 on the app, they get $10 to try out, you know, the first one or two orders.
Wow.
We know it's annoying, so we appreciate people going through that.
So do you mind if I ask, what happens if someone who may be just driving through hasn't listened to this, is not from our area, is just driving down the avenue, passing through, would recognize, I think most of us think when they see kind of a small little structure in a parking lot, pardon the phrase, for lack of a better term, oh, there's a coffee stand on every corner.
Sure.
Would just assume, oh, I can just pull right in here and order a drink like the typical situation.
Yeah.
How do you treat those situations?
Well, first of all, we're happy to have people do that because we want to be able to tell people what we do and why we're doing it. It is a little disappointing for some people if they're expecting coffee and they get an app instead, you know, but we try to explain how they're going to get an app and then get coffee. We usually will try to make them happy somehow, maybe a free coffee or maybe that, you know, you generally can download the app, get signed up, get coffee at Foray before you could drive anywhere else and get any coffee because we're pretty fast.
Okay. So you introduce them to the,
yeah.
So my next question is, do you plan to expand this idea with multiple locations?
I hope so. I joke with nerdier people and just say I have to like build like four just to spread our costs out, even if it fails. So it's a hoped for thing that we would be able to have more sites. But right now we just have to show that people care and it matters to people, like any business, right?
It's a fascinating idea. Good luck, and Howard Schultz, watch out.
Yeah, right.
Kyle,
thanks
for joining us. Good luck at the Innovator Awards, and it's just a fascinating idea. Just been intrigued by it, and glad we got a chance to visit and learn more. Bob Bauer is a STEM champion finalist, along with Debbie Gallagher, and their goal is to be a community partner that brings industry and education together to provide a host of high-quality STEM experiences for students in our valley. We're always hearing about everything that Bob's doing out at Chelan PUD. Bob, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And, Bob, you're also always instructing kids with those summer programs with out at the dam, and you really enjoy being an educator?
I love being an educator, whether it's crisscross applesauce on the floor with preschoolers or elder hostel with senior adults, just watching light bulbs come on in the minds of people when they discover something new. People often ask me if I want to move up the career ladder. I'm just one of those few employees. I love what I do. I'm happy with it. And I would like to retire doing the same thing I was doing when I started.
So one of UNW's projects is the FWEE, and I'm not sure what FWEE, Hydropower and STEM Career Academy, but what's FWEE?
So FWEE is the Foundation for Water and Energy Education. And FWEE is composed of several different public utility districts and other utilities and other environmental groups, et cetera. And we meet together and we brainstorm, we share ideas, we try to draw the best out in one another. And we don't patent anything, we don't copyright. If I've got a good idea that somebody can use on the west side, we share. And so we've just learned that there's wisdom in the council of many. And when we kind of all apply our thought processes together, the end product is always better.
So what did you think when you had this opportunity to be nominated for an Innovator Award?
Well, it's humbling and exciting. And I looked at the others who were also nominated, and it just really reminds me of how STEM-oriented our entire valley is. It's not just us. It's the whole valley, whether it's the education system, industry. And the reality is that STEM, I'm of the opinion that STEM has been around forever, science, technology, engineering, and math. When we have River Ramble out this Saturday at the Leavenworth Hatchery, part of Salmon Festival, the old design of how you set a teepee up, that's technology. There's a right way to do it. And if you don't get the poles set the right way and tied the right way, your teepee's going to come down when the wind blows. And so the whole STEM concept that we kind of think is this new, next popular phase, it's really been around forever. And science, technology, engineering, and math is absolutely what is going to take our students into the future.
So these, by the way, in the summertime, you teach those classes out there. I'm not surprised that those classes fill up just like that, because you seem like you make it a lot of fun. I'm not sure who's having more fun, though, you or the kids.
Well, it's a mix. It's probably 50-50. And I always tell everybody, you know, when I'm with the smaller kids, I'm 5'4", for anybody who doesn't know that. But put me in a group with third and fourth graders, and I'm in a social setting. I'm one of the taller people. And so that's always a good day for me. We do all kinds of education for all kinds of students. And we kind of say from the womb to the tomb. And so we've got something for everybody. The one that we decided to highlight when we were nominated for this, this award, was our Hydro STEM Academy. A handful of years ago, we recognized that, basically every junior high and high school student in our valley could tell you what a firefighter was. They could tell you what a police officer was. But a lot of them don't even know that there's a career field known as the hydro mechanic. This is a guy who might be diving 120 feet under the water and fixing things. And they might not know what a plant operator is or a high voltage wireman, those kind of things. So we put together this 40-hour academy. It's a 5-day event. We provide host housing just as if it was an exchange student. So our employees provide housing if it's a student coming from a distance. And we invite students from all over the country to come to this 40-hour academy. They spend time out at Rocky Reach. They'll climb poles with our linemen. They'll put divers' helmets on with our divers. They'll spend time with our project managers, our electrical engineers, our mechanical engineers. And what really has been exciting about this is we do two things. We introduce them to a lot of careers that they didn't even know existed. But then we also introduce them to the career pathways. We've got lots of careers that you can really do well in life and have a great career that don't require 4-year college degrees. And so We're pro college. We believe in college higher education, but not every student is cut out for that particular pathway. So we provide the different pathways. And then to kind of put the icing on the cake, we actually were able to partner with both of our local high schools and also Wenatchee Valley College. So we can have a student coming in, going into the ninth grade, attend this 40-hour academy, and actually be enrolled in Wenatchee Valley College and get his first college credit. So it's just really been a successful program. And for us, you know, and I think Kyle and Jenny would probably both agree with me, I don't want to speak for them, but the winners are the kids. You know, whoever takes home an award on a Wednesday afternoon, I mean, we're honored and that's wonderful, but as long as the kids are learning, that's where the real winners are.
Well, that's what the FWE Hydropower and STEM Career Academy is all about. How many slots are typically available?
We keep it really small. We decided to stay with quality over quantity. So about 26 is the max that we take. And, we have a real diversity of students that come. We have male, female. We have all kinds of ethnic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And, it's kind of been exciting to just watch that naturally happen. And it's a great experience. We always encourage students going into high school through their senior year to watch out around January, February is when we start getting the information out for that year's academy.
Well, look forward to that here in just a few short months. So, again, Bob, Kyle, thanks for joining us. And I'm glad Jenny's office arranged for you both to be here. And good luck to all of you and all of the finalists. It's, again, September the 25th. The Innovator Awards a week from this Wednesday up at the Wenatchee Convention Center. And again, GWADA.org for all of the ticket information. Jenny, have a great luncheon and a great ceremony.
Thanks for having us on air. We'll come back with our winners maybe next.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Appreciate it. Bob, Kyle, good to meet you. Good luck and thanks for everything you're doing in the world of science and technology and STEM, and particularly in your business, how you're employing the latest technology. That's really cool what's going on at 4A Coffee. Again, what do you search for the app for your business, Kyle?
4A Coffee.
4A Coffee.
F-O-R-A-Y Coffee.
There you go. All right. Appreciate it. Bob,
thanks
good
for
to meet you.
Us.
Yeah,
you
thanks.
Bet. You bet.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ, kpq.com. And streaming on Alexa or the KPQ mobile app.
A recap of an interview we did just a few weeks back with Alan Walker with the Community Action Council on a recent community survey with some alarming results on the situation in our community concerning the issues we're facing in terms of poverty and homelessness. And we bring you that interview from back on August 19th.
When we were going through this process and finally finished this up and we really did, that really was a red flag. This concept of the economic divide getting deeper, if you will. And we see some of that happening, I believe, as a result of just being a great place to live. And so we have a lot of folks retiring here. They're retiring here with a fair amount of wealth. And so that certainly is impacting that. And we also, you know, the headline not too long ago, a couple weeks ago, Wenatchee was the fastest growing job growth market in the state and right up there in the top in the country. So there's this incredible growth and job opportunities going on. And at the same time, unfortunately, we're leaving behind a big chunk of our population. Our poverty rates really have not changed very much in the last 10 years, but yet our area median income has increased significantly.
Alan Walker, by the way, is executive director of the Chelan Douglas Community Action Council. This community needs assessment, this is a report that is required of our area every 3 years.
That is correct, Dave. Every 3 years as a requirement through Congress, we are required to do a community needs assessment as part of our federal funding requirement guidelines. And so we go through this process every 3 years. I've only been with the organization a little over a year and a half now, and so this is my first time to go through the process with them, and I found it to be very fascinating and learned so much about our community that I thought I knew, but I didn't.
So there are some warning signs. We're going to touch on those. There has been improvement as well. Mm-hmm. There's also gaps in community resources and some priorities that have been identified as well. How did you gather all this information? How did it all come get pulled together?
Sure. It was an exhaustive process, and we were talking just before we went online. Steve Maher, we contracted with Steve Maher to really lead the charge on this work. There were a little over 400 survey respondents. We had focus groups. We had six different focus groups, totaling about 70 or 80 people within those focus groups. Then we also conducted one-on-one interviews with another 10 or 12 folks. And we did one community forum as well at the community center, at the Wenatchee Community Center. The results of that, though, what was really fascinating, we did some demographic questions along with the survey. 40% of the folks that completed the survey reported household income below the federal poverty level, which is $25,000 for a family of four. And 65% of the respondents on our survey were below the area median income. Around $50,000 is our median income for the area. So we really felt that we did a good job of not just hearing voices, but really hearing from people that we needed to hear the challenges that they're facing every day.
So, you know, we live in a more of a rural area. I guess we might expect that our wages might be a little bit lower mm-hmm. than maybe even the statewide average. But this was alarming. A third of low-income residents say they or a family member reported skipping a meal due to finances. So there's a lot of there's a term for that. I think it's called hunger insecurity.
Yeah, food insecurity. Interesting enough, the U.S. Department of Agriculture identifies Douglas County as a food desert. Not just a community or two within Douglas County, but the entire county as a food desert. Basically, they're saying that there are a lack of resources for people to access food, and they're isolated from free food pantry opportunities, or oddly enough, just access to food in general. And you think about the abundance of produce and vegetables that we have grown here, and fruit, but yet the whole county is isolated.
A third of households in Chelan and Douglas counties headed by a single parent. That's unfortunate.
It really is unfortunate. So many of our children are growing up without two adults in the household, and unfortunately, that can lead to a lot of other social challenges and issues.
I was reading through some of your summary on this. We have this amazing Foothills Trail System. We've got this amazing trail system around the river. We've got all this recreation. Some of this recreation opportunity is expensive, but getting out and walking is essentially free.
Yeah.
Yet we have obesity rates that are climbing here amongst our youth, more than the statewide average.
Yes, more than statewide average. Our obesity rates for youth under the age of 17 are climbing significantly here over the last 10 years. And you're right, we have this wealth of opportunities to get out and exercise. A couple of things came out during this process. One was, yes, the opportunities are there, but accessing them is not always necessarily easy. You know, we have a really good public transportation system here, but not necessarily to trailheads. And so I think that's one of the things that Link Transit may be looking at. And even if you have a vehicle, if you really are struggling, as so many of our population is around around economics, low income, getting out and exercising isn't really necessarily a priority on your list of things to accomplish that day. It's am I going to get food on the table? How can I get a better job? How can I improve myself or my family?
Yeah, it's interesting. It becomes a real issue of priorities.
Right.
Kids ready for kindergarten. We're lagging behind that to the statewide. That's a concern, certainly. There's about 12 warning signs here, which I'm kind of jumping around on your chart here. But the kids ready, we're having problems with kids being ready for kindergarten here.
We are, and that's been an ongoing issue. The state has really implemented some, what some feel are really restrictions to child care providers. While the quality of care, they're really trying to elevate that, but it's also setting up barriers and making it more and more difficult for child care providers to operate. And so we have, over the last 5 years, seen a significant number of child care providers going out of business, no longer operating that service. And so then that just creates that narrower window of opportunity for people to access early childhood education programs.
I think you mentioned roughly one in four youth 17 and under living in poverty here. A third of all residents are on Medicaid in our area.
Yes. Very high numbers. The one in four children living in poverty. You just had the news story on with Sir Wenatchee Valley, you know, doing the back to school food or clothing. Huge asset to our community, the Sir Wenatchee Valley program. And they're certainly one of our partners trying to address this as well.
So there have been your study identifies the needs assessment identifies some regional improvements for mm-hmm. our two county area. Number of Hispanics in higher education has risen. Public transit ridership has grown. The number of physicians has increased. Our mortality rates declining. High school graduates have risen, and the number of Hispanics in higher ed has risen. So those are all good things, but we do have some gaps in the community resources that your needs assessment identifies.
We certainly do, and there's five or six of them there that we really called attention to. One of them that we really didn't draw out, but I think it's important to mention as well, Dave, and we may talk about some of these other ones, and that really is the coordination of services. And as a network of social service organizations, as healthcare providers, as the education system, how do we do a better job of connecting with each other to be sure that when somebody walks through the door at Community Action Council, if we're not able to help them that day, how do we hold their hand to get to that correct avenue of help? And I think that's one of those areas that we didn't call out here on just the one-pager piece of it, but it really did come out that people didn't know where to turn to for help, didn't know how to access assistance. And so I think as an organization, as an agency, as a community, as a region, we need to do a better job of helping people understand that and getting that word out and doing a better job of advocating for folks needing help.
Well, we all kind of know what's going on with the housing prices here. They're going up. There are less houses being sold maybe than a year ago, but the median price is going up. But I thought this was kind of interesting that with our median home prices rising 69% since 2013, there's a lot of what's called down buying and down renting. In other words, people are buying a home less of a home than they could otherwise afford just because of inventory that's available, but then that's making it harder on everyone at the lower buying levels. So they're sort of forced into so it really is kind of an impact all throughout the market. It makes it harder for folks to get into a house, maybe first-time homebuyers, right?
Yeah, it really does, and I think it's even a greater impact on people renting. We really see this in the rental market where people are renting someplace much lower than what they possibly could afford or maybe even what they would like to have. But the housing market is, as you were saying, just so limited. The inventory is so limited that it just isn't available there. And interesting enough, my wife and I just sold our home and moved into a condo, and we wanted to rent for a little while. We had the option of one condo in Wenatchee Valley to rent here just a few months ago. So that really, to me, spelled out how much of a housing crisis we really are in. Yeah.
Yeah, and then our education thing, we hear about this a lot. Our level of graduate degreed employees that are here is perhaps keeping other employers from coming here. This is my question to you is, are we in danger of becoming and you see it covered on some of the cable news channels, if we don't remedy some of this, becoming the kinds of places that we see in some of the larger cities where you've got this very upper class and not much in between, and then folks that are living mostly in poverty? Is that where this report suggests that we could end up if we don't remedy some of these problems?
Yes, unfortunately, that's kind of what our finding was, and that's the trajectory that we're heading on as a community. And I don't think that's the trajectory. Having a hard time getting that word out. I don't think that's the route that we want to take as a community. I think, nor is it very healthy as an economy either. Having a solid middle class is the backbone of the U.S. economy. And I think once a community really starts to separate itself out and have a less predominant middle class, it has not a positive impact.
So how will this community needs assessment be used to come up with some resources to try and fill some of these gaps? Yes. What comes next?
Well, what comes next out of this for us as an organization is really looking internally, and we take this information and start looking at our strategic plan for the next 3 to 5 years. Where is our community saying that we as an agency need to direct our resources, that we need to focus on? How can we adjust to that demand? And that is one of the great things, one of the flexibilities of community action partnerships. We have that ability to adjust as the community needs dictate that we need to focus on. So we'll be looking at this. We'll be, over the next 2 or 3 months, developing our strategic plan, our focus areas for the next 3 to 5 years, and getting that in front of our board of directors and for approval upon that. We'll also be taking this report, just as we're sharing here today with your viewers, your listeners. We want to get this in front of our elected officials, too. And so we have emailed the report out to all of our local and state and federal elected officials. We want them to understand what's going on here in our community. And then we also want to have the opportunity to get in front of them and have this one-on-one conversation as well.
So your needs assessment also identifies a lot of barriers to accessing social services. So whether it's even from a part of our Latino community of being afraid to ask or even share information. In fact, I noticed that was in the report that was a concern that some aspects of our community they were afraid to share information, and so I suppose that may have impacted a little bit trying to get all the information you wanted to get. But there is a fear of sharing information.
There really is there and. I didn't realize how deep that fear is until we really started through this process and really started talking with folks, talking with our local Hispanic population, and understanding how deep that fear is. The survey that we did was I don't remember the number of questions now, about 20 questions, if my memory serves me correctly. And it was not so simple as to just email that survey out and hope to get a response. There were times when we were spending close to 30 minutes one-on-one with individuals to go through that survey and just to help them understand that we need to know what's really happening in your life to know how can we as a community help. And so it was a very time-consuming process.
We're talking with Alan Walker. He's the executive director for the Chelan Douglas Community Action Council. If you'd like to get an online version of the community needs assessment, just go to the website for community, Chelan Douglas Community Action Council, which is cdcac.org. I think if you just Google, you'll get the Chelan Douglas Community Action Council website. Again, it's cdcac.org, and then you'll see a link for the community needs assessment there. Alan, what is the community, Chelan, when you're not doing like this community needs assessment, what does your organization do on a year-round basis?
On a year-round basis, we have about 6 or 7 different programs that we operate year-round. We have a housing program. We also have 2 affordable housing apartment complexes, one in Wenatchee, one in East Wenatchee. And then we also provide a variety of different rental assistance type of funding for individuals. We have energy assistance. That's primarily during the fall, winter months. People can come in and that are needing help with their utility bills. They can get assistance through that. We do a weatherization program. We're going into homes, improving not just the energy efficiency of the home with insulation and sealing air cracks and doors and windows, but also how do we address a health environment within the home. And so we're able to look at it, smoke detectors, CO2 detectors, carpeting issues, trip hazards, and things like that in a home. We provide literacy for adults. We have a literacy council, adult learning for those 18 years and over. AmeriCorps program, very strong AmeriCorps program. We have 20 folks that are going to be going off into various avenues of service here in our community starting next month. So a strong AmeriCorps member service program. What else? Oh, food distribution center. Can't forget about that one. We're going to be distributing, it looks like this year for 2019, close to 2 million pounds of food throughout Chelan and Douglas County. And that's about 120 to 150,000 pounds per month that we're delivering.
Here in the food desert.
Here in the food desert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is amazing with in an agriculture area that we're considered a food desert. Food and desert. That, again, if you missed that earlier in our discussion, that the food banks around here are maybe only open a couple of days a week, mm-hmm. and yet we have so many people that report being hungry.
Yes.
And worried about where their next meal is, and you know, we just don't have enough food bank operations right. to serve the need here, and so yeah. we're termed to be a food desert. That's a
food desert.
I've never heard that one before.
Yes, it's just but it's just as it sounds, just not the access there, isolation. And you mentioned the food pantries that are operating here. You know, there's a couple that operate in Wenatchee. You know, a couple hours a week really is all that they're open. And so East Wenatchee does not have a food pantry. Rock Island does. So there definitely are areas for opportunity.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to share while we have you here? We brought you in to kind of explain a little bit more about this community needs assessment and when and folks how they can access it and kind of the next steps from here. But while we have you here, anything else you wanted to give an update on?
You know, we're doing really good as an agency. Community Action Council, been here since 1965. It's a strong organization. We have great staff. And if folks are on the air and they're looking for help in their life with some way or another, if they're needing some assistance, come by. Come by and see us. If you're interested in on the other side, if you have some time and you want to support your community through volunteering, come by and see us as well.
Yeah, where's your office at?
We are in a little neighborhood down South Wenatchee area on Lewis Street. We're at the corner of Lewis and Cascade okay. here in Wenatchee.
Well, they're there to help. Chelan Douglas Community Action Council, 620 Lewis Street in Wenatchee. We appreciate the visit today and the update on this community needs assessment. Alan Walker, the executive director, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.